The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Jennifer Gannon and Joe O'Shea with us for our weekly TV spot. Joe, what are you going to do for weekly recommendations if BBC Four gets the axe?
I know, Matt. It's really bad news. And I kind of felt sad when I heard it this week, because when BBC Four started off, I loved it. It was really clever. It was arts, culture, history, and it kind of niche TV. But I really thought it was a fantastic channel. Not a lot of people watched it, but it made stars of a few presenters. And actually, those presenters are now kind of rallying around the flag that it looks like BBC Four is going to go. It only costs the BBC $44 million a year to run this channel, which is a pittance, really, in TV terms. But under the current circumstances, with the corporation facing huge cutbacks, it looks like they're going to axe it. Maybe merge it with BBC Two, maybe put it online. But the days of being able to tune into BBC Four to see your documentaries on Renaissance art or, the 100 Years' War are numbered, unfortunately.
But Jennifer, I thought this was the type of programming that public service broadcasting and the licence fee was supposed to pay for. Instead, the reports are, and these haven't been confirmed yet, that BBC intends to start going chasing a youth audience which is losing to Netflix. And you sort of wonder, well, will it be actually able to win that audience back? And what about continuing to cater for those who are fans of the BBC rather than chasing Netflix?
Yeah, I think it's an odd move, and I think it's been prompted maybe because of the success of Normal People, funnily enough, because BBC Three was their youth station and that was kind of shunted online, and it was there for kind of introducing people to new comedy shows, like, say, The Mighty Boosh came from BBC Three, and I think that was their calling card. And I think now that they've looked at the success of Normal People and how many millions of people are trying to access it on BBC Three online, they're thinking maybe we threw the baby out with the bathwater and we should try and be capitalizing on the youth market. But I do think with BBC Four, you have to remember, like, that gave us The Thick of It, and it gave us Storyville, which is like a place where you have some of the best documentaries you would ever see. I think one of the best things they ever did was, if anybody wants to find it out there, it was a show split into four documentaries about terrorism in the 70s, and it was called Generation Terror. And there was a documentary about the Baader-Meinhof gang called In Love with Terror, and I think it's one of the best documentaries I've ever seen on that subject. And I also think they really went hard on arts, like the way that they would have great music documentaries, and I think it will be devastating that if you lose that really important resources. They have this massive archive of, you know, the old Great Whistle Test right through to old Top of the Pops, and I think, you know, they did really in-depth work about stuff like the emergence of electronic music. Like, it's a wealth of information there in BBC Four that I think we will miss. But, you know, and I also think they're cutting out their audience if they move it online, like the way they did with BBC Three, because a lot of their audience, their core audience, are older people that might not want to actually venture online. And it will be okay. Sad to see it go.
Speaking of online, I see that the RTE player has had over a million views for Normal People, which is getting about 350,000 viewers when it's on RTE2, and N has done about a million on the player. Something else that's on the player is Marty Morrissey with his own chat show from his shed. Is this essential viewing, Joe?
It's essential viewing for RTE, because RTE and, like all the other stations, have to come up with ways of making shows under the current conditions. So it's, you know, it's doable. You can put Marty in a shed outside his house in Clare on the Wild Atlantic Way. He can talk to people by video link. He has Chris O'Dowd on as a kind of a kickoff, which is a nice way to start your show.
That's a good coup. That's a good person to get. Yeah,
it is, and it's a good coup, and it's. They're basically having to deal with what they can make at the moment. So Marty's available, his shed's available, and they can put him on Skype so they can make a show with that.
And Jennifer, in fairness, he's very affable, amiable, and he has a contact list, which means he can get this done.
Yeah, and he's a big personality we all know, and kind of he's like a folk hero almost in Ireland, with like the best eyebrows since Alyssa Edwards on Drag Race. So, I mean, I think people just respond to Marty, and they might miss him. They miss him from not being on TV as much now, with like sport relegated to nothing. So I think they just want to pull out their heavy hitters in RTE that, you know, will have a big viewership. And I think that's what they're trying to do with this show. And it's no bad thing, you know.
Of course, he is on RT1 television on a Wednesday evening because before the lockdown came, himself and Bernard O'Shea had filmed their new documentary series, Marty and Bernard on the Road Again. So let's hear a clip from it.
Bernard and I are on the road again.
On the road again?
Yeah!
Woo-hoo. In this new series, we're meeting people from different communities who do remarkable things.
Each week, we'll meet a new group with whom we'll set a challenge in order to fundraise for that group.
Working together, we'll use our wits.
On guard.
As well as our contacts.
Go on, the lads.
In order to complete the challenge and raise the cash.
This is the highlight of my career. I just want you to know that.
What could possibly go wrong?
I go on.
Just stop panicking!
That's like I've delivered to Marty Morrissey.
How does it work out, Joe?
Do you know what? I watched the show and I'd never seen so many cups of tea served in a show in my life. And then I was thinking, it's basically a TV equivalent of a nice cup of tea and a hobnob, which is not necessarily a bad thing, especially in the times we live in at the moment. It was a women's group from Ballybock in Dublin, and it was really genuinely well done and a lovely community, lovely story. The two guys are genuinely enthusiastic, and sometimes you get these kind of shows and it's like, hey, let's be crazy, let's put the show on right here and all this kind of stuff. There's an element of that to it. There would have to be. Things have to be amped up for these kind of shows.
Yeah, but they're two genuine guys. They're two genuinely friendly people who like meeting people.
Exactly, and that's what makes it work. If you had guys who just wanted to be on TV, it wouldn't work. If you had guys who are pretending to do it, it wouldn't work. They are genuine, they're affable, and they've found nice groups of people. They're going to do with one of the Dublin Fire Brigade, they're doing a male stripper kind of thing coming up, which is going to be fun, I'd say. And yeah, it works. And like I said, it's the kind of TV that we need at the moment, really.
Okay, something else that was on Monday, and I saw Patrick Frayn had a real go at it in his Irish Times review, was a documentary about Dana, Rosemary Scallon Brown, who of course became Eurovision winner in 1970, then became a hero for the religious music lovers in America when she spent time out there, came back and had an attempt to win the presidency on a couple of occasions, and also was an MEP for a while. Let's hear a clip from the documentary in which she recalled a pretty tough interview she did with Vincent Brown during the 1997 presidential campaign.
Tonight we're going to talk to the presidential candidate, Dana Rosemary Scallon. Call us at 1-8-5.
I did a really difficult interview with Vincent Brown.
Did you favour the decriminalisation of homosexual practices?
Why do you ask me that?
I want to find out about your values.
Well, why do you want... Has this been asked to any other candidate?
You're the first candidate I've interviewed since they declared themselves to be a candidate.
Well, I say, why am I being pilloried in this way?
Why are you so defensive? Why don't you simply answer the
why
question?
Why can't you ask me
did you welcome the
about issues that matter to this country as a whole? The fact that in the middle of an economic boom, there are children sleeping on the streets. I didn't know his form. And he'd be... big sighs and his head and his hand. I thought he was sick.
All right. If people have the right to own what they earn, then how can you say you're in favour of the state redistributing their wealth?
No, I'm talking about the government ensuring.
But the government must do so by redistributing wealth that is earned.
Well, then there's no problem.
What do you mean?
It was tough. You just seem to go round and round on a couple of things. But I did answer it. And I've always tried to see both points of view. I have tried to be very honest.
Okay.
So tell me, did the phone call go through reception?
And afterwards, this great big man walked towards me and I thought, oh no, he's going to give me a tough time as well. And he said, I heard you on the Vincent Brown show. And if I was near him, I'd punch him right in the face. And I thought, oh... So there was a turning tide.
Joe, I know you've seen the documentary. Did it delve deeply enough into her political views?
It didn't, because it didn't have to be honest. She has had a 50-year career, and she's lived about four different lives. She was a teenage Eurovision winner. She was a, you know, in her 20s, she was actually, and it's easy to forget how big a star she was in the UK, a chart music star and a TV personality in the 70s. She moved to America, became a kind of a business mogul, and as you said, a star of religious music over there, came back, ran for president twice, was an MEP. I think it did a really good job within an hour of giving a really good overview of a fascinating woman. I think her character came through, maybe not as much as she thought it might, but you could definitely see the steel in the woman. You know, she cried a lot. She came across as pretty fragile. I'm sure she wasn't putting that on, but you also saw that she was tough, and she was very good at deflecting and doing things on her own terms, and she tried to do that with Vincent Brown, and she ran into a brick wall there, and I think everybody who heard that interview remembers it very well. I think the show did a very good job. I actually loved the archive, and it did give a very good sense of place, of Derry, of Dublin in the 70s, and, you know, where she was, the world she was living in. I was surprised at how well it did its job in the time that it had.
Sometimes we need more time when it's in documentaries to do them properly. Picks of the week. Jennifer, you're going for something from Netflix. What is it?
Yeah, it is White Lines, and it's on Netflix today. So the whole thing is there to watch right now. So it's from the creator of La Casa de Papel, Money Heist, which is a global sensation, a Spanish crime series. So it's set in Ibiza, and it's about the disappearance and death of a Manchester DJ. His body is found 20 years after he went missing. His sister Zoe, who's played by Laura Haddock, she returns to Ibiza and enlists the help of her brother's best friend, who's played by Daniel Mays from Line of Duty, and they're attempting to disclose the circumstances of his demise. Like, they believe it probably could be murder, but it's, you know, as usual with Alex Pina, his stuff, it's a really surreal trip through drug-fueled parties, sex clubs, encounters with corrupt cops, and a whole subterranean community of criminals. And it's like a very adrenaline-fueled ride. There's loads of elaborate set pieces and stunning scenery, so it's a gorgeous watch as well as anything, as, you know, just being an intriguing story itself.
I'll be back to you in a minute, Jennifer, because I imagine you may have something to say about Joe's pick for his selection pick of the week. What are you going for?
Well, I was going for Marty's magical Eurovision moments. I'm a Eurovision fan, unironic Eurovision fan. I always have been. It always happens around my birthday. It's a big part of my life and has been since I was a kid. This is on RT tomorrow night at 5 to 7. It's basically Marty Morrissey giving us the greatest hits of the Eurovision. Made very recently and under the current conditions. It's got a pretty good opening, as I've seen a clip of it, which is going to maybe surprise people. And I think, you know, we need a bit of nostalgia. The Eurovision is fantastic. I love it every year. I'm going to miss it this year, so I'm going to kind of wallow in a bit of nostalgia tomorrow evening.
Okay, would you watch this, Jennifer?
Yeah, you know me. I love Eurovision.
That's why I'm asking.
Rylan Clark is also doing an A to Z of Eurovision tomorrow night on BBC Two. And if you are missing that slice of insanity, this is a great little trip through the whole Eurovision vibe, from Azerbaijan to, you know, the Italian Gorilla Man, and right through to like the Swedish Eurovision performer Zelmerlo. He was the one who not only won the contest for Sweden, he hosted the contest, and then he took part as the interval act as well. So it's going to have like all the disasters and costume changes and memorable moments from Eurovision. So I think, yeah, as Joe said, we really need it, and we really are missing it, I think, this year. They could have done it. They could have done it in isolation. I think it still could have happened.
How excited are you to have Charlie Brooker back on the telly?
Very. I mean, if anyone is going to guide us through this dystopian hellscape, it really is Charlie Brooker. And not only that, but I think, you know, with the show that was on, it felt really cleansing at this time. And he felt even more necessary. And I think he is someone that expresses the mass, you know, incredulity at the ridiculousness of what is going on in the UK at the moment. And a skewering of Boris is vital. It felt healing. It was just, it's great to honk with laughter at the complete madness of it all. And not only that, but when he was being earnest, and he put on a literal earnest hat to emphasize that we are dealing with, you know, tragedy upon tragedy, he's still aware of that primal urge to laugh at the whole farcical nature of this whole pandemic. And it was very soothing and weirdly cathartic. And I was so glad to see him back.
Okay, is that still available to see somewhere? Is it on the BBC Player?
It's on BBC iPlayer, but I'm sure they will repeat it. I'm nearly sure that they're going to repeat it this weekend, I think, late enough on BBC Two, so I would just check around for it.
Okay, thank you very much, Jennifer Gannon and Joe O'Shea, for being with us here on The Last Word at Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.